Sangam. Association. Na. Not. Kuryat. One should make. Pramadasu. With women. Jatu. Ever. Yogasya. Of yoga. Param. Culmination. Param. Topmost. Aruruksuhu. One who aspires to reach. Matsevaya. By rendering service unto me. Ratilabdha. Obtained. Atmalabbaha. Self-realization. Vedanti. They say. Yaha. Which women? Niraya. To hell. Dwaram. The gateway. Asha. Of the advancing devotee. Translation. This is another heavy verse. One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized his self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman, for such a woman is declared in the scripture to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. You can repeat. One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized his self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman. For such a woman is declared in the scripture to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The culmination of yoga is full Krishna consciousness. This is affirmed in Bhagavad Gita. A person who is always thinking of Krishna in devotion is the topmost of all yogis. And in the second chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also stated that when one becomes freed from material contamination by rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can at that time understand the science of God. Here the word pratilabdhatma labbaha occurs. Atma means self and labha means gain. Generally, conditioned souls have lost their atma or self, but those who are transcendentalists have realized the self. It is directed that such a self-realized soul who aspires to the topmost platform of yogic perfection should not associate with young women. In the modern age, however, there are so many rascals who recommend that while one has genitals, he should enjoy women as much as he likes, and at the same time, he can become a yogi. In no standard yoga system is the association of women accepted. It is clearly stated here that the association of women is the gateway to hellish life. The association of women is very much restricted in the Vedic civilization. Out of the four social divisions, the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, three orders are strictly prohibited from the association of women. Only the grahasthas or householders are given license to have an intimate relationship with a woman. And that relationship is also restricted for begetting nice children. If, however, one wants to stick to continued existence in the material world, he may indulge in female association unrestrictedly. So, sangam kuryat pramatha sujatu yugasya param paramaru rukshuhu matsevya pati labdhatma labho vadanti yad nirhya dvaramasya. So, omaganati mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, for those of you who weren't here yesterday in the last few days, we have to reiterate. So, what Prabhupada said, for the man, the woman is woman, and for the woman, the man is woman. So one should understand that. That means the object of enjoyment. So it's not that this is not a sexist statement here. It's just the object of enjoyment. Like stree, the word for woman, means. Of course, there's a different word used here, but the stri means that which increases the enjoyment. So for the woman, the man increases the enjoyment, and for the man, the woman increases the enjoyment. Of course, association with women, or for women, association with men, is more than just like some physical thing. There's actually, like Prabhupada talked about, illicit life means like planning about, thinking about, you know, dreaming about, making endeavors, et cetera, collecting money for, or something like that. So all these are different ways, or just, for example, who's cooking today? What? Okay. Watching Bollywood movies, for example. I have to be careful. You know, make sure that I don't get in trouble after, you know.
There's no confidentiality.
Well, I mean, watching Bollywood movies is the same thing. Because one is contemplating sex life. You understand? There's no difference. You know, you can say I'm watching a romantic movie, you know, either Bollywood, Hollywood, or, you know, or Mollywood or Shbollywood or whatever it is. It's the same thing because you're contemplating it. You know, romance, I got news for you. Romance, other than the romance between Radha and Krishna, is just illicit. Sure, I hate to tell you that. Anyway, there are some romantic things in the Shastra, on the other hand, that are not exactly romantic because they're not illicit, where you like Kardama Muni and Devahuti, you know, they're flying around in their airplane. That's not illicit. But it's not that he became her dancing dog or she became his dancing dog. That's why the word used here for women here is very interesting. It's pramadushu. Pramadushu. So pra means to emphasize, that's the prefix, of course. It means still more. Prakriti rupena. Prakriti rupena means to emphasize the word still more. So madushu means an illusion. Or as Prabhupada sometimes translated, mad. You know, madushu. Madushu doesn't literally mean mad, but illusion means madness. All right, so pramadushu means that which makes us more mad. You understand? And of course, we've spoken many times before, when one is in love, then it's the same in the brain as if one is snorting cocaine. And that rhymes. Brain, cocaine. Anyway, got to make a song up about that one. Or like they have that other song when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie. That's amore. In other words, one becomes completely bewildered by this, you know, this association, attraction between men and women. Just like one loses their common sense and does things that are just completely inconceivable. Maybe not inconceivable to sane people, isn't it? So that's what the word pramadushu means. So. Anyway, so that's the point of any type of enjoyment. When we become mad or attached to something, especially actually the topmost enjoyment or the topmost attraction is the attraction between the sexual attraction and this material world. So how does one avoid that? Of course, one can say, take this verse out of context and say, one should never associate with attractive women. All right, let me associate with ugly women then. But Prabhupada also said that for every man, his wife becomes attractive. So beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Just like you find different beastly species, you know, even amongst human beings, there's 400,000 species of life. And some of them are really ugly. I mean, at least from my perspective. And I'm just imagining, what does he see in her? What does she see in him? I mean, it's 500 pounds. you know, some of the, I mean, I'm not going to mention different cultures, but anyway, there's some like Aboriginal cultures, you know. And so, you know, beauty is always in the eyes of the beholder. Just like we mentioned before, the demigods, they look down at us, and generally they're just seeing a bunch of jumping frogs. You know, once in a while you have someone like Ahalya. You know, Ahalya, Gautama Rishi's wife, who Indra becomes attracted to. Once in a while you got some beauty queen there. Not the person who wins the Miss World competition. Miss Universe. That's funny. They even have a Miss Universe competition, isn't it? How do they know what it looks like in the rest of the universe? You know, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of stupid. You know, Miss Venezuela, Miss America, Miss Dog. Anyway, so it's all relative. So the demigods, they just even see Miss America, Miss Universe is just like, it's like I saw a spider this morning crawling across my floor. That's it. So there's no attraction. So beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Or like, you know, or like, even like a female frog will look at a male frog. And it, depending on how big it pouches and what how he rivets. She'll become attracted to that. You know, what a pouch that guy has, you know. Or the peacocks, they'll look at the peahens, they'll look at the male's feathers, isn't it? Look at those feathers. Wow, that guy is really something. And of course then right after the mating season they drop all the feathers. Because they don't need them anymore. It's just like in the human marriages, you know, the lady, you know, drops all of her attempts at beauty after marriage sometimes. And the man comes home and he finds his his thing with curlers on, you know, and mustache wax and everything. So anyway, so this is going on in every, the point I'm making is this is going on in every species. It's like even in America, they call it the birds and the bees, right? So the point is that when we see someone else, the real point is to see someone else as a potential object or an actualized object of enjoyment. You know, that's the point. And if we don't see someone else as an object of enjoyment, then you're not associating in the prohibited way. You're seeing someone else as a servant of Krishna. Like Prabhupada even said, that for the devotee ladies, their association is elevating. You know, not that one should try to enjoy them, but one should appreciate the service. Just like we have in a family, it's a Krishna conscious family in the movement. It's not that the men should just go calling the women agents of Maya and the women should be calling the men agents of Maya. We understand, we're brothers and sisters and family members all serving Lord Chaitanya. So if one keeps that consciousness, then one can avoid this pramada business, becoming completely an illusion. Of course, one has to be alert. You know, very much alert, because, you know, Maya, if you let down your guard and you start to think, I can actually enjoy that thing. Anything. You know, just like, you know, if you're walking down the street and you see some nice car. Yesterday I was taking a walk and I saw a Mercedes driving down, and I said, wow, I could be in there enjoying life. Because I don't know what I would do with it. Go visit the Sankirtan devotees or something like that. But, you know, the as soon as we let down our guard, we look at something and think that we can be the enjoyer of that particular thing. Or, you know, the guru thinks he can be an enjoyer of the service of the disciples. Or we look at food, you know, especially if you're cooking for the deities, you have to be very careful and not think, you know, when you're looking at that, you know, mango or something like that, you can't be thinking, boy, oh boy, I can't wait till it's offered. You know, like sometimes in the past, we had some people who would come to the kitchen door and they'd open the kitchen door and look in, is it offered yet? Is it prasadam yet? Well, hell, if you're looking at it, probably can't be offered anymore. Because it says when you look at something and lust after something, you can't really offer that thing to Krishna anymore. So Anyway, so especially the cooks, you have to be. That's why when we're in the kitchen, we don't generally taste things. You know, I know when I was living with my mother many years ago, before I took up Krishna consciousness, she would always be tasting things. And, you know, as she was cooking, she would taste things and say, isn't this delicious? Imagine cooking in the kitchen, doing such a thing like that, because she couldn't control her senses. Hmm. Actually, nice besides that. Anyway, so that's the point. If we want to avoid this bewilderment, this pramada, and we have to be very, very careful. Of course, we have to be careful in dealing with the opposite sex to avoid that. So there has to be following some injunctions, like you shouldn't be alone with someone you're not married to, you know, a lady that you're not married to. I mean, that's just practical. I remember in the early days of the movement, the temple president would many times try to send me. I was a young brahmachari. It's hard to imagine. But one day, once upon a time, I was a young brahmachari. I was actually 20 years old. It's hard to imagine, isn't it, when you look at me now, just 20 years old. He was never 20 years old. So, and then the temple president would say, all right, you go and cook in the kitchen with this brahmacharini. And the brahmacharini would go, hee! And I said, well, you know, what about the injunction? And then and the temple president said, you know, Krishna will protect you. And so I said, well, Krishna's also protecting me by giving me the intelligence to say, no way, Jose. So anyway, so Krishna protected me. I'll tell you another funny story. Another funny story is that I was taking over as the temple president of Miami once, and the devotees were making money by pinning flowers on ladies' lapels. You've probably seen that before. And so I was driving to Miami, you know, take over being temple president, because the temple president was going to Hawaii. His name was Narahari. And on the way, I stopped at the rest plaza, the Fort Pierce rest plaza. And the devotees had permission. They were distributing flowers. And so I wanted to see what they were doing. So then I saw that, you know, there were many ladies coming out with, you know, flowers right there, pinned. And I said, well, there must be some nice lady devotees distributing here. And so then I went and I saw, you know, it's brahmacharis. And I said, what? You're really renounced, my dear brahmacharis. Don't you ever get disturbed by this? And they said, no, our temple president said we're transcendental. And I said, it's nice he told you you're transcendental. Maybe I can get that blessing too. So... You know, so I took over, and after a while, one of the devotees cracked. I mean, he actually told me, he said, yeah, I've been actually having dreams about women all the time because, you know, I'm dealing with them intimately. And then once he cracked, the rest of them said, yeah, me too, me too, me too. It's like the emperor's new clothes. Everyone was afraid to say that, you know, it was disturbing their minds. So one has to take adequate precaution. At the same time, we have a transcendental, you know, Krishna conscious family, but there has to be some precautions. In a lonely place, a secluded place, one should never be alone with a member of the opposite sex. And actually nowadays, just to protect the children, we have this no adult should be alone with a child. And not that, you know, the people have, generally people don't have the inclination, but there are people with the inclination, but that's to protect the children. It's called the two rule. Which means there always has to be two adults with a child. It's not who's not your child, obviously. I mean, the mother can't say to the little baby, you know, I can't be alone with you. That'd be kind of silly, you know. You know, the child says, "Mommy, no, I got to wait until your father's here before I can touch you." You know, obviously, it has to be applied with intelligence. But there's, you know, these things are to prevent something. I mean, obviously, in most cases, nothing's going to happen. But an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So, anyway. So on that note, anyway, so we'll continue. Actually, yesterday we were talking about, you know, Vaishnavas who did enjoy their senses, or, you know, false renunciates, referring to the Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And we said that there are, there's actually four types of false renunciates. One is the monkey renunciates. Those are the ones that swing from tree to tree. The false renunciates, that means who become renounced to make money. Unsteady renunciates, those who, you know, get so burnt out with the material world, they decide to take sannyas, and later on, a year later, they figure out they're not so burnt out. And the imitative renunciates, they are imitating the devotees, imitating the renunciates. Anyway, so we talked about this yesterday, but renunciation actually comes from bhakti. It's not that bhakti comes from renunciation. That should be understood. So it's a natural thing that occurs. It's not that you should force someone to become more renounced than they actually are. That's one thing I've learned. When I was a young devotee, I was always trying to force people to become more renounced. Snap out of Maya. Don't be attached. And sometimes I still do it too. You know, I forget. And I said, don't be controlled by the tongue. You know, just eat raw food. And the person goes, ah! You know, whenever they, even, who was that? One of my friends, Krishna Consciousness, was taking 2 years to come here just to visit because they were afraid of me that I would start talking about diet. Anyway, so I've learned my lesson sometimes. So it has to come naturally by devotion. It can't. If it's artificial, then one actually flips to the other side after some time. You know, artificial renunciation means a negation. Negation means to meditate more on the sense object. And then when you meditate more on the sense object, ultimately you give in to the sense object. I'll tell you a story about that. In the early days of the movement, there were two sannyasis who are no longer sannyasis. I was traveling with them. You probably remember Guru Kripa. And Yashodananda. And they were always like negative about women. You know, just like, women, huh? You know, and they're just like, You know, it was frightening. So I said to them, you guys are talking more about women than anybody I've ever run into before. Did you ever remember that with them? Yeah. And I said, you guys are talking more about women. And he said, ha. Because they were, one of them had like a semi-criminal background. Ha. I said, woo, excuse me. And I said, I'm getting out of here. And so I left their association, thank God. Before they went to Japan. And I took their deities with me. Chotogorda diet. You know, I said, phew. So anyway. And they're both happily married now. So the point is, we don't. That's not how you become renounced, by being negative towards the sense objects. Although people thought that in the early days of the movement. Anyway. But we should cultivate this intense yearning, which is called sadmut kanta, eagerness for bhava bhakti, and that, then automatically renunciation is a byproduct of those things. We don't focus on renunciation. We focus on attaining bhava, or the emotions in relationship to Krishna. And one of these symptoms of, there's several symptoms of bhava, is that one has a real taste for singing the holy names. And they don't want to do anything else. They don't want to hear any other songs. Any other songs other than the holy names, or, you know, songs, Vaishnava songs, are just like, yuck. Even if they're mode of goodness songs. It's just like so-called mode of goodness songs, like sitar. Like Ravi Shankar, you know. anyway, we're not going to mention mode of goodness U.S. songs, or Western songs. And the ruchi becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. Okay. So one becomes, if one has the bhava bhakta, one is a bhava bhakta, he becomes a very affectionate or attached to those places that are related with the Lord. And there's two types of places related with the Lord. One type is in this world, and the other type is, you know, for lack of better place to point, is in the spiritual world. You know, I don't, where am I going to point, you know? Down there, you know, people think it's hell, but anyway, but it's not really up there. But so anyway, so there's two places related with the Lord and the devotee. I mean, for example, we become, I'll explain what that is, what that is. So as far as the places within this world, we become attracted to what's called the spiritual world within this material world. And the spiritual world within this material world means where the Lord had pastimes on the earth, and also where the devotees worshiped the Lord, like here in Nuvaloka. Like Prabhupada said, the temples are by Kuntha. So like Vrindavan, Navadvip, places of great devotees, that means, you know, even in Calcutta where Prabhupada lived, the bank of the Ganges, wherever Tulsi grows, this is also considered. One should become attached to a place like that. Place where the pastimes of the Lord are recited, or place where the forms of the Lord are installed. These are all dwelling places of the Lord. You understand? Not only the Lord's abodes like Vrindavan, Mayapur, etc., but wherever the form of the Lord, wherever Tulsi's worship, wherever the Ganges flows, etc. So those are places within this world. And then, of course, there's the spiritual world like Goloka Vrindavan. So the symptom, we should try to develop attachment for these places. That's why one reason why the devotees go on pilgrimage, so they can become very attached. They can think about these places all the time. Like I think about Govardhan because I spent a lot of time there. So you just think about it. And or you think about the temple here, you think about the deities here, you think about any place, or you think about any place where a pure devotee resides. Okay, so that's a symptom. So another symptom of bhava involves knowledge. So it's important to understand how a bhava bhakta deals with the cultivation of knowledge. So, of course, a bhava bhakta is only interested in knowledge that helps him connect with Krishna. So there's different types of knowledge. This is interesting. There's sense knowledge, that means things you can perceive with your senses. Moral knowledge, knowledge of God, it gets three so far. Knowledge of Brahman, of spirit, that is spirit, you know, like the soul and everything like that. And then pure knowledge, that means knowledge of Krishna and the spiritual world. So there's sense knowledge, of course, means things like physics, electronics. It's interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur even mentions the word electronics. That's nice. That shows our attachment. You know, whenever I see that word, I become excited. I get that's a vibhava for me. You understand? It excites. It's an exciting term. It's amazing how different people have different things they're attracted to in the material world, isn't it? Like I know people. If I say the word logic, and there's one lady I know. She becomes very attracted to logic. Another person, psychology, another person, music. So we all have these different types of knowledge we like to attain. Okay. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this some more. We're not going to get into this in depth because we want to try to finish most of the book. Then there's moral knowledge. Topics of God and the afterlife are not part of this knowledge, but it's the knowledge of karma. Then there's theistic morality knowledge, where one develops a feeling of gratitude towards God. That's not quite the highest stage. And so his relationship to God is actually one of gratitude for helping him enjoy his senses. And under this knowledge, you do not understand the Lord. And there's impersonal knowledge. Many varieties of impersonal knowledge are there. One variety is And they all agree on the same thing. There's no substance except for Brahman. What is perceived is not truth. It is a conditional perception or conditional reality. There is no individual jiva soul. It exists only as a vikara or vivarta of Brahman. That means a transformation or an illusion of Brahman. Vikara vivarta. The world is false. And four, he was taking the false identity of jiva when this illusion given up is Brahman. Five, liberation from the illusion is the final goal. And six, Brahman is nirguna, that is without qualities or energies. So this is these are the different common denominators that every impersonalist has. Okay, so we'll go on to tomorrow, talking about the different types of knowledge and the qualities of Baba. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to the divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.